We welcome in a former NHL GM and scout. Now he's a scout and analyst for TSN. Craig Button joins us. Craig, lots going on. Interesting. I want to get your thoughts. Stretti had had a question earlier. He brought it up because, you know, in Major Leagues of Baseball, after the draft, and now they have it. So you have a certain amount of money you can spend to sign players after that. And he was, and now he wanted to say, hey, what if the NHL shortened the draft? You know, he said 3 rounds. I thought that was too short, but let's just say 5 rounds. But then there was a limited amount of money you had to then sign other players. Do you think that would be a good thing or a bad thing for hockey?
No, I think that it would be a positive thing. I mean, number one, I mean, the teams that have a real confidence in their talent evaluation and have a real confidence in their development programs. I mean, so they're going to be able to look at players that did get drafted in the first 5 rounds, and then they're going to be able to go and decide who they want to sign. And I think that, you know, you want a reward. Like, I'm a big believer in rewards should go to the people and to the organizations that do the best work. I don't want to see rewards go to people that aren't doing good work. I don't want to just see rewards handed out for the sake of rewards being handed out. So, you know, when I consider that, and remember, you know, the entry-level contract is capped, so you're going to be capped there. But, you know, you want to sit down and you want to say, hey, listen, we've got 5 rounds. Who do we want to sign out of these next group of players? And, you know, the teams that are really good in their evaluation and really good at developing those players are the ones that are going to benefit. So I like the idea. I think it's one that I would be full on favor with, and I think that the PA would love it too, because, you know, the more rounds you have in the draft, that gives the teams more control over players. Like, give them less.
Yeah, the best part of it was that you couldn't sign any non-drafted players until they were 20. And as you know, Craig, I'm a huge proponent of making the draft age older. So I would love that factor, because then teams are like, okay, these guys didn't get drafted. Okay. But in 2 years, now you can sign free agents. Then you know who's going to be good or not. And that's when you're scouts, because not only would you be scouting guys that are draft eligible, you'd have to scout as well as some players that are free agents.
Yeah, well, you would. But keep in mind that if you have an 18-year-old draft and you can't sign them until they're 20, you know, you have to have them signed after you've had them on your reserve list for 2 years. So now the leverage all swings to the players. The teams would not want that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I see, Jason, you and I have been talking about the draft and the draft age and everything, and is there a perfect solution? I mean, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, and one of the things that I think could work is that it's a 20-year-old draft, and every team in every draft has a chance to draft one player under the age of 20, whether that be an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old. You still have to hit that age. But you get a chance to draft one 18-year-old or one 19-year-old out of that. After that, it's all 20-year-olds. And you know what? You don't have to have players opt in. You don't have to make a declaration on, oh, is this guy exceptional? Does he belong in the league early? Leave it up to the teams. Let them make the decision.
Yeah, I don't mind that one either, right? What you'd have to – slowly you'd have to, you know, I guess, go back in the drafts at some point, right, so we get to a point where the majority of players were 20. But I think a lot of people forget the draft used to be a 20-year-old draft, right? And when we look at the greatest draft in NHL history, Craig, shockingly, it was a 20-year-old draft, right? Not shockingly, you know what I mean? Sarcastically, the 1979 draft. And even the 2003 draft, when there was a lockout and a lot of players who probably would have been in the NHL were back in junior for another year, I don't think it's a surprise that year they were just as dominant as well.
Well, no, and it gave those players a chance to develop, right? And,
yes.
You know, and develop according to their own, you know, biological maturation needs. Whatever schedule they were on, they didn't get pushed ahead. And, you know, even when I go back and I talk about the NHL draft, they did that in 1974 in the NHL draft. It was a 20-year-old draft, but every team could draft one 18-year-old. So the New York Islanders drafted Clark Gillies with their first pick, and they drafted an 18-year-old Brian Trotsche in the second round. Which worked out pretty good for them, but they identified the Brian Trotsche. Maybe the next year would be a top five pick. They took him. So to me, and then Pierre LaRouche, I believe he went seventh overall. He had 250 points. He went to Pittsburgh, seventh overall. So every team can make their own decision. You want a 20-year-old? Take a 20-year-old. The Washington Capitals took Greg Joly. He was 20.
Yeah, didn't work out for them. We had Trotsche on the show actually last week in Storytime. He told us one of the greatest stories about the draft, and how his father, so he'd been drafted. Now, he wasn't even 18 until July. So
right.
He couldn't officially sign the contract himself. So the Islanders flew him and his parents in. They put him in first class in the plane, alcohol. And the plan before they left, their father said, hey, whatever they offer us, we're going to take it. We're going to go back and think because the second offer is always better. And Brian tells us how his parents got on the plane. They get a little tipsy. The Islanders wine and dine him. They get into New York in a limo. You know, they take him to the arena. And then they offer him like $250,000. Signing bonus, a free truck, and a 3-year deal. And his dad's like, where do we sign?
What did they say about the best laid plans?
So it's just kind of interesting.
Pierre Lacroix tells a great story about Alexander Day. You know, he had prepared Alexander Day. Pierre Lacroix was an agent at that time in the 1993 draft. So Ottawa was taking him. They went in to meet because they were going to get him signed before the draft because Ottawa was going to take Alexander Day. And so he prepared him. He goes, here's where we think the range will be. And you know what? Just follow along. You know, I got this under control. So Alex went in there. And the Ottawa Senators' offer was so far above what Pierre Lacroix had estimated the top signing bonus would be. Pierre says, I'm trying to kind of remain calm. And at the same time, I'm trying to give him a little kick with my foot to tell him, just sit down, don't tip anything.
Oh, I can imagine that. You want to sign us for what? Because, yeah, back then, Craig, like, signing bonuses, it was amazing how the league, like, when you think about times of change and different things, like, players were getting huge dollars, and some of them never ended up even playing in the NHL.
Well, and at that time, you know, we talk about, the baseball slotting. I mean, like an agent, and they had to. Everything they had to do at that time, it started with Eric Lindros with the big signing bonus, and it just led to all these young. So a first-round pick, a first overall pick was going to get a lot more than the second and the third. So it was imperative upon the agents to try to push teams and try to push their players for them to get drafted as high as possible, because it was real dollars, and it was significantly less the further you fell in the first round. So, you know, when it was to that point, you had to be able to do that. So, you know, I mean, that's the slotting now in the Major League Baseball, and certainly you look back, and quite frankly, that was a big reason there was a lockout in 94-95. I mean, the older players are going, wait a second here. We played 10 years in the league, and, you know, these guys are getting this kind of money. Like, well, stop it already. And, you know, that was a big adjustment. And, you know, the adjustments continue on to this day.
Craig Button joins us from TSN. Craig, training camp's July 10th. If everything goes to plan, that's when it's going to open up. And then, the 3 weeks of training camp. And who knows if the exhibition games are in that or however that works. But I was looking at numbers, and, you know, there's a little bit more offense at the start of a season in the NHL, but not as much as I think we believe there is when I actually went back and looked, and I broke down it in every 15-day segment throughout the entire season. And funny enough, actually, the last 2 weeks of December were the most offensive in the NHL this year, and I can't figure out why. But the coaches have had 2 months now in the qualifying round to know who they're playing. The players come back. There's going to be training camps basically with only your NHL roster and then a few other extra players. As much as I want to think like there's going to be more offense, I actually might think there might be less, because we all know coaches look at system play to thwart goals, not necessarily how to attack and score more. So my initial reaction was, yeah, there's going to be a lot of goals because of this 4.5-month break. But now that I look at it, I'm like, maybe not. What do you think?
Well, you know what's fascinating to me? And, you know, we look at the, like, you've gone and you've broken it down with respect to 15-day segments and who started out quickly, who struggled maybe a little bit, what was the overall, effect on offense and defense. But, you know, we are now at 13 weeks yesterday, or, you know, when the pause began. So let's go 4 more weeks. That's 17 weeks before training camp has started. So yeah. I ask you this question, Jason. With the coaches never, ever, not preparing for a playoff round, not preparing, you know, in between playoff rounds, to spend this much time on coming up with systems of team play, themes, ideas, you know, whatever different strategies they want to. And they never get this amount of time with the same group they had. Yeah, they get it in the off season, but then they got to implement it with the new group. This is the exact group that they left with. And so the opportunity for coaches to be innovative, to be creative, and to say, you know what, can we do to take advantage of this break? What can we do that these coaches have never, ever had this opportunity ever in their lifetimes. And I'm going to guess they're never going to get another opportunity. I'm going to be putting the coach's feet to the fire, because if you can't take advantage of all this time with the same group of players you've worked with the whole year to try to implement strategies that could be really effective, understanding what you're up against, you'll never get it from those coaches. A lot of coaches are going to reveal themselves coming back, and I love it.
That's really interesting. I never looked at it that way, just to kind of to see, okay, you know, because I look at the Edmonton Oilers, Craig, and from January 1st, the Oilers were the second-best offensive team in the NHL. They were the 10th-best defensive team in the National Hockey League. I think some people have forgotten how well the Oilers were playing, and I really believe, and I know it was a small sample, but I think Mike Green adds a lot to them and what he's going to be able to bring to that team. And I believe Athanasio, there's no chance he can be as bad as he was, I would think, when he returned, considering, you know, he just lost his confidence. I think they're in a chance where the Oilers might be a surprise team when they come out of this.
Well, and I don't know about surprise. I mean, they go into it with as the fifth best team in the West. So, you know, they're already pretty well positioned, and they have a coach and a coaching staff that to me is innovative. I don't have any question in my mind that Dave Tippett and his group can implement strategies that can help them be successful. Then you add in a healthy Mike Green, a more confident Andreas Athanasiou, right? Like everybody's, and then the vim and vigor that the players are going to feel, right? Knowing that they've had this great run, let's get at it and let's show what we got. I think it's a fantastic opportunity for the Edmonton Oilers. You know, interestingly enough, when, you know, we all talk to different people and exchange ideas, but, you know, one of the things that, you know, Corey Crawford's a pretty darn good goaltender. So we talk about what does a healthy Corey Crawford look like against the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah, he's good. But I look at the Chicago Blackhawks team, and one of the things that they have a massive problem with is that they surrender just as much high quality chances as anybody in the league. And now you're talking about a top power play and a top offensive team. I think it's just tailor-made for the Edmonton Oilers to take full advantage.
Craig, you know what? I totally agree. And I wrote, the only way the Oilers lose this is if they just play like junk, because they're a more skilled team. I think their defense is better. You're right in Corey Crawford, and we had Woodley on, and you know he's one of the best goalies at high-danger shot saves. But you know that's not against necessarily the league's two most prolific offensive players. And that's just a day. Not every shot, a high-scoring quality chance, is the same. When it's Austin Matthews or Draisaitl or McDavid shooting it compared to Archibald from the slot, I'm sorry, it's not the same.
Well, you know what? You can go talk to Riley Sheahan, who went that whole season until the last game of the season before he scored his first two goals of the season, right? And you go back and you go and ask Riley and you go and track it, he had some really high-danger chances. I mean, obviously not as many as the top guys, but he did. And because he doesn't have the same finishing skills, he that's why he went goalless to that point in the season. And you're exactly right. And again, Corey Crawford better be good at the high danger chances, because the Chicago Blackhawks are as good as anybody of the 24 teams that given them up.
Craig, great stuff, man. Have yourself a fantastic weekend, and I look forward to breaking down the series as we get closer to training camp.
I do too, Jason. And you know what? It's a good time to have a great weekend here in Alberta. A lot of people, not all a lot of people, everybody's done a great job of, you know, being together by staying apart. And we've reached phase two and pushed some things from phase three into phase two. So I think that, you know what? We still got to continue to be cognizant of what we're faced with. But citizens of Alberta have done a great job.
Thanks, Craig. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks.